Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Sex trafficking, substance abuse, street violence, sexual assault, and gangs. These are only some of the risks faced by kids who don't have homes. How does a kid not have a home? Where are their parents? Why can't they be at home, or why won't they be at home? How many of them are there? Can a 16-year-old kid tell his or her parents that he or she's just not coming home? When does a parent call the police, and what will they do? How can you make your kids stay at home, or can you? And what are the health risks faced by homeless kids? What do I do if my kid is on the street? I know I have lots of questions myself, so I know there's probably a lot of parents out there listening to this right now that will have some questions for today's guest. I'm also hoping to hear from anyone who has a story about being homeless as a teen. If you've outgrown it, or if maybe you're a parent of a teen who's been homeless, call us and let us know how that happened and what happened to actually help you out. The way to reach us with your questions or comments today is you can call locally at 550-8433, or if you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. The last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell that out, line1@alaskapublic.org, and we'll do our best to get your questions on the air. Joining me to discuss the plight of homeless teens in our community are Josh Lowers, Heidi Carson, and Kelly Jo Pruitt, all from Covenant House, Alaska. The topic today is street kids. Who are they? Why do they have nowhere to live? And what's being done about it? Josh Lowers has been serving runaway and homeless youth at Covenant House, Alaska for 2 years and has been working with vulnerable populations in Anchorage for 7. As outreach program coordinator, Josh oversees Covenant House, Alaska's street outreach teams and day drop-in center. In his time at Covenant House, Josh has logged numerous hours on the street and in the drop-in center building relationships with youth and supporting them as they seek to leave the street. Heidi Carson has been serving runaway and homeless youth at Covenant House, Alaska for over 10 years. Heidi has worked in a number of positions throughout the agency and is currently the Shelter Services Program Coordinator. That's a lot. Overseeing day-to-day operations for the shelter. Heidi's a trained social worker, an expert in the field of youth homelessness, and has served thousands of youth in her time at Covenant House. And Kelly Jo Pruitt, who is a return guest since she was on earlier with Alaska Crossings. She was born and raised in Alaska and has always had a passion for working with youth. She's been working at Covenant House as a caseworker for just over a year. Kelly's also working on her master's in public health and preparing to go to nursing school. She's worked with youth all over the world and loves building relationships, empowering youth to rise above their circumstances. Appreciate y'all taking the time to join me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yep, thank you.
Fortunately, we don't have to answer all the questions that I listed today. Today's show is a first in a three-part series that we're going to do on Line One on Alaska's street kids. And today we're focusing on the who are they and why are they homeless type questions. The next time that we get together, we're going to take a closer look at the realities of street life, meaning the more the drugs, the alcohol, the sex trafficking, some of those more what happens to a kid in day-to-day existence on the street. But today, really, I'm interested in why are they out there and what are we doing to help them out? All right, so I guess let's start off with each of you giving me just a brief little rundown on how you guys got involved at Covenant House and what do you like about being there? So we can start with you, Heidi.
Okay, well, I was a homeless teenager myself, and I utilized Covenant House's services and on a few occasions when I needed to. So being able to be an adult in the lives of our youth that is like any other has been incredibly rewarding for me.
Did you say you were a homeless youth?
I was.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. That's that's good. So you have the double perspective.
I do, yeah.
From both sides of the fence. All right. Thanks. Kelly Jo?
Yeah, I first heard about Covenant House in high school, and I actually volunteered at our old location and got involved with the Candlelight Vigils then. And then when I returned to Alaska a little over a year ago, I had been working with youth and was excited to continue to work with youth. And so New Covenant House was a great place where youth can go and seek refuge, and so I wanted to be a part of it.
And you started volunteering in high school, you said?
I did.
Where'd you go to high school here?
I went all over, but all I graduated over. From West.
Okay, so you're moving all over. Josh, what about yourself?
So I've been in Alaska a little over 8 years, and came up as a youth pastor. And as a youth pastor, spent some time at Parachutes Teen Club and Resource Center. That's where my wife works. And they serve a similar population as Covenant House.
Mm-hmm.
And then also doing some stuff at the soup kitchen. But so knew of Covenant House for 5 or so years, but was invited by the, at the time, the outreach case manager to apply. That was, 2.5 years ago. Kind of a long story, but a good story. And I've been there since then and love it. Love serving kids in our places. It's really good work, hard work, but rewarding.
So let's talk. We'll start with you, Josh, a little bit about what is your job as an outreach coordinator.
Yeah, so I get to oversee our street outreach teams and our day drop-in center. So we have 7 days a week now. We have teams that are out between 3 and 5 hours a day or night that are building relationships with teens all over the city, bringing basic water hygiene, hats, gloves, that sort of stuff. But really just letting kids know that they're cared about and that they have some opportunity to access some services or a place to go if they need it. And then our day drop-in center is, we're open Monday through Friday, 10 hours a day. And we have soup and sandwiches and computers and laundry and showers and that sort of stuff. So we kind of are the front end of Covenant House services of our continuum. And then, we serve our youth as they kind of come in and out. The process of leaving the street life tends to be a long one for a lot of youth. And so we see our youth, we have kids that come in 10, 12, 15 times. And all the way along that process, outreach and drop-in are a part of supporting that youth while they might be in or when as they go in and out of our services.
So really it is about just being out there and kids seeing a familiar face and knowing that if there's something that comes up, you're going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes we throw around the term, like we get to be the first face of grace or like an opportunity for, most of the youth that we serve spend a lot of time on the sidewalks in our city with people not looking at them or intentionally looking away from them. And we are a face that looks directly at them and says that we care and that we're there. And if they want to make a change or if they want to try to do something different, we're there to help them in that role.
All right. Heidi, your job is Shelter Services Program Coordinator. I got through it better that time. What does that entail?
So that's a real fancy way of saying I help manage the shelter. So that's our residential program. That's where oftentimes Josh will meet the youth on the street and he'll, kind of build that trusting relationship with them. And he might be able to convince them, hey, you don't have to sleep out here. You can come to the shelter. So at that point, we kind of go through an intake process with them at the shelter. It's a voluntary program, so they can decide to stay there or not. And we kind of link them to the services that they need after that.
All right. And Kelly Jo, you are a case manager?
Yeah, or caseworker.
Caseworker.
Yeah, so we're a 24/7 shelter, so we have three different shifts throughout the day and working with the kids. And so I primarily work on day shifts or in the drop-in center. And so my role consists of building relationships, which is my favorite part of getting to know the youth. And then each youth has an individual case plan with goals. I like to say their success plan. So how can we help them and empower them to, rise above their circumstances? And so that's anywhere from getting hooked up in school or checking in with them about their work schedules or getting their social security cards and IDs.
The day-to-day stuff that kids need to apply in for jobs, that sort of stuff. All right. Let's get into what makes a teen homeless? I mean, is it because they're out overnight, they won't go home, or is there a definition or the criteria before they can access your services?
So I really think, there's a lot of reasons an individual could become homeless. Some of these youth's families are homeless, or they might have been staying in a car or something like that. They don't have a suitable place for where human beings should be living. So sometimes it's a whole family unit problem. Other times, you know, we serve youth 13 to 20 years of age at the shelter. So there's a lot of families that say, okay, you're 18, you're on your own, get out. Especially in the foster care system, a lot of those youth age out of that system. They don't have anywhere to go, and they don't have the skills to, you know, they're not like a going to college and then they have a fallback in case they blow out of that dorm room. They really don't have anywhere else to go. So, you know, 18 to 20 years of age, they don't have that safety net. So oftentimes they end up there at the shelter. We do have kids that are abandoned. Sometimes they have medical issues and their family doesn't want to deal with that. Sometimes they have mental health or developmental disabilities and their families might not want to deal with that. So we have youth from all over the state, and we've had plenty of youth come to us internationally and then through other states too that just ended up here thinking that they might connect with family or friends, and then they ended up without a place to stay.
All right, so it sounds rather complicated.
Yeah.
There's not a really simple answer, but no. As far as for defining a homeless youth for your to access your service, it's really any kid in need of shelter.
Yes.
I mean, for a night. I read something on your website about immediacy. There's some core values there, and immediacy was one of them. So if a kid shows up at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, doesn't have anywhere to stay, and says, I need somewhere to be, what do you guys say?
We say, come on in.
Mm-hmm. And then that's when the work begins. As far as, well, you've already done it in the outreach program, building the work. So that's probably how do most kids hear about Covenant House? I guess that's how do they end up showing up?
Yeah, it's an array of different ways. I mean, some of it is, it's the street contact, must be an out there. It's, I think a lot of youth show up because other youth have been in our programs. And so when a youth hits the street, there's other youth who are out there who are saying, well, you know, if you need something, you can go hit Covenant House. But we also, as part of our outreach continuum, we get into schools and we're doing presentations. We get out and do a number of different presentations on youth, on our services, on youth homelessness. And we connect with different businesses that youth frequent, and different, you know, hotel lobby attendants and places where youth gather. We get them our information cards and we let them know. So we try to empower our city when we meet folks to be outreach workers for us. And so, right. You know, I was eating lunch with a kid the other day, you know, who said, hey, you know, somebody gave me this blue card that, you know, I didn't really know who they were, but they saw this and gave me this card. And without that card, I wouldn't be here. You know, and so, or we get a phone call. I get a number of phone calls of like, somebody gave me this blue card and I need a place. And, you know, but so it's an array of different ways that people find out about Covenant House.
Do you ever have to turn kids away? I mean, is there a full, what happens if you're full? I mean, those cold nights when everybody wants shelter, I know that the adult shelters have problems with overcrowding. Mm-hmm.
So we have 60 beds, and 2 nap rooms. And in our current facility, we haven't hit our capacity.
Okay.
Last winter, we hit 53 youth, but have not hit capacity. And so, but if we did hit capacity, we have cots and we have other spaces that we would put youth in. So we wouldn't be turning people away. We do have situations where a youth may lose services with us for a time. Mm-hmm. And that involves, you know, if they've been violent in the house or if they're dealing drugs in the house or things of that nature. And in that case, we work hard to help them find emergency housing even in that. Like our outreach team has built good relationships with Brother Francis Shelter and with the Rescue Mission. And so if we have a youth that is exiting our services on a Saturday night, we're calling those places and giving them rides to those places. So even if a youth can't stay with us, that doesn't mean they're going to the street.
You're trying to access some other yep. facility. Okay, for those of you who might be tuning in late, my guests today are Josh Lowers, Heidi Carson, and Kelly Jo Pruitt from Covenant House Alaska. Today is the first in a 3-part series on the problem of teen homelessness in Alaska. Our topic for this show is, who are they, why are they homeless, and what's being done to help? As always, you can reach us with your questions or comments through our local phone number at 550-8433, or you can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, or email us your questions at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so next question is, how many of these kids are, like, what are the numbers that you guys serve, age ranges? Is there a is it sort of like the old pregnant snake graph? I can't really show you on radio the hand gestures, but you guys get it, where there's a heavy load of 15, 16, 17-year-olds and lighter in the younger and older ages, or how does that work out?
So we serve youth 13 to 20 years of age. The average age of the youth that we serve is about 19. Okay. And it's about 50-50 male-female.
And the younger kids, is there a 13, 14? Is there a good number of them accessing services?
Absolutely, yeah.
And what are some of the, I guess, the issues that are putting kids on the street? Why are they on the street? Why are they not at home? You mentioned maybe their family is homeless, something like that. Those are the circumstances. I have a client right now that family's homeless, and the kid was homeless for a little while, and because she couldn't stay at the family shelter because she was 19, right? So she ended up in your services. So what kind of things put kids homeless other than circumstances like that, sort of?
Well, there's a lack of foster care, foster homes available for youth, for teenagers especially. So I think that's kind of a citywide epidemic there, as far as just having a no availability for suitable foster homes.
I think we also, I mean, really for a youth to choose the street over their home, there's got to be something going on there. And so we see, you know, we see youth who are fleeing abusive parents. We see youth that are fleeing addicted parents. And it's a fine line. You know, there's always that perpetrator victim line of, I mean, everybody does some good things and everybody is. And so, you know, it's complex. You said complex earlier. And I think the longer that I do this work, the more that I find out that every single situation is very complex and is an array of circumstances and decisions that are made by parents and by youth that might put somebody on the street. And you throw in substance abuse and you throw in, you know, other factors, and then that leads to a youth choosing the street. And just like the reasons why youth might get to the street are complex, then the solutions are also complex. And so trying to address the array of things, you know, from substance abuse to trauma,
right?
Complex traumas and all that sort of stuff that kids are dealing with, trying to help them sort that out to get back kind of on a, you know, a safer, stable path is a big task.
Is it fair to say that a good percentage of kids who access your services are from abusive or neglectful or substance, a home that has substance abuse?
I think that we could better track that number through the fact that about 40% of the youth in the shelter are from foster care.
Okay.
So they were already removed from their homes and placed in the custody of the state.
I did read that 40%, that's the statistic, that age out of foster care end up in your shelter.
Yes, then that's true.
Mm-hmm. Is that from a lack of planning, a lack of access to affordable housing? I mean, I guess that gets into a whole nother conversation, but it seems like if they're with you guys for 6 months and then, or I guess if they're in foster care for 2 or 3 years, there should be some sort of permanency planning mm-hmm. for afterwards, but those things fall through.
And again, there's no safety net. You know, if you have your 18-year-old who blew all their money and now they can't pay rent, there are things that mom and dad can do to kind of facilitate them not losing their apartment,
right.
Or, you know, something can happen there. For these youth, they have nothing. So they end up homeless.
So they might have been set up well, and then just one little thing. Mm-hmm. Losing a job,
or not set up very well at all. I mean, there's quite a few with mental health issues or developmental delays, and they might fight to get out of custody because they're sick of being in custody, and they'll be released from custody with no plan or options or viable options, and then they end up on the street.
All right, so back to a couple more of the programs that you guys run out of Covenant House. I know for the younger kids, is there a difference in how you treat the younger kids and the older kids? I mean, obviously, I would think so. Common sense tells you that younger kids, you're probably looking more towards reunification with families as much as possible. And older kids, it may be a transition into adulthood. So
for our younger residents, the focus is going to be more about going into school and finding, you know, we're going to be working to find them housing, whether it's in their homes, out of home placements, or somewhere they can live and be safe and not be staying in a homeless shelter. For our older youth, you know, that really depends on what their plans are. Some of them really want to get their own apartment, and they're working on saving their money and getting the job skills and the job and maintaining that job to save that money. Some of them are able to go into a transitional living program, and be able to be successful in that program before transitioning into an apartment. So it kind of depends on the youth plan. But then we also have youth with a lot of, like I said, mental health or developmental issues where they're not able to live on their own. So connecting them to the services that are going to help them throughout their adulthood is where we begin that process.
So getting them qualified for Social Security disability if they're not, or for developmental disability services. How about hooking them up with the guardian ad litem?
Yep.
Those sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Identifying a vulnerable adult potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Transitional living program you mentioned. Does somebody want to speak to that one?
Yeah, so we have two different transitional living programs.
Right.
We have Rites of Passage, and that houses about 15 youth. And those are for the youth that they've been, most of them have been in the crisis center, and they have jobs and they've been holding down the jobs. And so it's the next step for them, so they can work on saving money while continuing to work a stable job. And then we also have Passage House, and that is for teen moms. And so there's five girls who all live together and do daily life together, and it's a safe place for them as well.
How many does that serve?
There's five moms.
Five.
Mm-hmm. And their children.
And their children.
Does that meet the need for single mothers, young mothers? Heard somewhere in some of the statistics that, I forget the number, but there's a high percentage of young women that have been pregnant or have a child or are pregnant that mm-hmm. access your program.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't meet the need. There's usually a waiting list for that. It's called a maternity group home, and there's usually a waiting list for it.
Okay. So, all right. So there's those two, transitional living, and that's for the older kids. Then we talked about the outreach program. What else do you guys have at play there at Covenant House?
Well, we have our workforce development team who they run a job group 5 days a week, and then they're also working out of our computer lab to help kids fill out resumes and get connected. We have some really cool partnerships in the city, like with the Millennium Hotel. They will do an internship program for some of our youth, and they'll do 30 days of an internship with them where we're able to use WIA funds to help pay for that, and with the idea that they'll be able to be hired on. So we have that whole component of workforce development. We have a housing coordinator who is able to access some different funds and works with different landlords in the city to try and help kids get into apartments and get going. We have a pastoral care minister who works with youth on spiritual matters, whichever faith they might they might bring. We have we have a wellness coordinator who's doing groups, just fun groups and poetry groups and discussion groups, that sort of stuff. We house a Title I school, and so youth who are wanting to finish school, and it's not just for Covenant House youth, but it's any youth in the city can access that. But I think they usually have between 20 and 15 to, well, maybe 15 to 30 youth that are in that school if they need to. But on the whole, we try to, if kids are in school, we try to keep them in school, and that's where Barb Dexter and the Title I program does great work in keeping kids in schools. Let's see. We have, we just have an array of, like, we have art space and music space and a rock wall and different ways for youth to succeed. You know, if they need to just go play the guitar and just get it all out for an hour or two, they can do that. And so we... We want to be able to help youth in that way. We also have VOA has a drug and alcohol counselor in-house. We have a number of partners who lend us their clinicians, their mental health clinicians, for varying hours during the week. And Nine Star is on in on Tuesday nights, I think they're in to help with the GED program. So we really have a very comprehensive, you know, network of people who are in-house. We want to be a one-stop shop for kids because part of the difficulty in leaving the street life is, you know, here's the form. You need to go to this office and then you need to go to that office and then you, or, you know, here's this. Is, but to be able to bring all those folks or a majority of folks, I think, into our house so that they can just walk to that office right over there versus down the street is really helpful.
So you're not giving a kid a bus pass and saying you got to go to Nine Star and then you got to go to like WorkSafe and then you got to go.
Right.
And they're trying to navigate all this with a bus pass and not a lot of knowledge of how it all works.
Yep.
Especially with trying to get connected to public assistance or some of those other social services, it's very difficult.
It's incredibly difficult. Yeah. The paperwork is daunting. And yeah, I mean, I can't navigate that stuff in half the time. So yeah, that sounds really great. All right, I think let's. This is a good spot to take an email, I think. So this writer says, excellent topic, two questions. Could you discuss any longitudinal studies that demonstrate the long-term effectiveness of Covenant House? And then two, what options are there for young adults who have aged out of Covenant House? So, yeah, those two. Is anybody familiar with the studies? Like, do you guys track? I'm sure it's difficult to track homeless people or homeless kids for very long, but are there things in effect that you guys are looking at?
Well, I think that Covenant House International has done some of that work, and they've partnered with different universities and have done some ICER studies with the University of Alaska and Columbia University with some of those longitudinal studies. I would like, personally, I would like to think that our youth want to come back and work at Covenant House like I did. So there's quite a few of them that I kind of feel like they came full circle and they end up working for us. So in a lot of ways, that's kind of my level of success is, yeah, come back and help out. So
and you find a lot of kids that do want to come back.
There's quite a few that want to come and help, yeah.
All right. That's great. What about after Covenant House, say you're 21 and you're aged out and all these supports just kind of poof, where do you go next?
Well, I mean, we don't try to go poof first.
It doesn't just evaporate and everybody disappears?
Right. I mean, a number of our services go up to 24. And so, I mean, we can't residentially house people after 20, but we can, if when we have relationship with youth and they've been working our programs, we don't want to just disappear from them. And so we find ways for them to continue to access services with us. But then it's partnerships. Like I said, we have I mean, if their continued need is emergency shelter, you know, then we can help with, or we can help funnel them to the other shelters in the city. But we try to hand off. I mean, we don't have super great inroads with, maybe Heidi, you can speak more about like adult services and,
You know, I think that our transitional living programs can serve youth for 18 months. So even, you know, if they got in when they were 20 and their 21st birthday is tomorrow, they're still able to stay there for 18 months.
Okay.
So, I mean, at that point, and then they have aftercare available to them. Our youth they check in with us. They keep in touch, and we're, especially with like the housing program too, that's another avenue where if we help a youth out with housing, our housing coordinator is paying some home visits. She's going to make sure that things are going smoothly. So a lot of the time they want to keep that relationship with us.
All right. We are at the halfway mark in our show. So let's go ahead and take our break. I want to remind listeners that you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. Our topic today is homeless teens. If you want to participate in today's show, our local phone number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. and our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we will continue our discussion about teen homelessness. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One, your health connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, my guests today are Josh Lowers, Heidi Carson, and Kelly Jo Pruitt from Covenant House, Alaska. I want to remind listeners that Dr. Woodard will continue to host our show 3 Mondays each month, and I'll be hosting a show the last Monday of every month on a topic relevant to emotional and mental health. Remember, as always, you can email your questions or comments about today's topic to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433 or toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, the show repeats tonight at 9 p.m., so if you're listening to this Monday evening, you'll be hearing a taped recording, and we will not be accepting phone calls. Okay, so before the break, we were chatting a little bit about what kids do when they age out and or get out of services or move into adulthood, and it sounds like there's a really comprehensive like effort to keep kids and to transition them smoothly into adulthood. I want to talk a little bit about something that comes up in my office all the time, and maybe you guys can shed some light on it because you are working with these folks every day. But one of the things that comes up in my office is parents say, what do I do? How do I, you know, if little Johnny won't follow the rules and he won't stay at home when I tell him to be home at 11, he comes in at 1 and we give him consequences and he says, I don't care. And parents get up to, you know, their eyeballs. I remember the first time when I was 16 and my father gave me this little duffel bag and said, why don't you go? If you're a man, go and figure it out and call me when you're settled and I'll buy you lunch. And he said it without anger, without any sort of threat. And I was like, oh, maybe not. Maybe I don't know everything. But parents today, I mean, I think the times have changed since because I'm ancient and that was a long, long time ago. But can parents do that now? If a kid is not letting their child parent them, can they say, I'm sorry, you can't live here if you can't follow my rules? Or kids just do whatever they want?
So as their legal guardian, you are legally responsible for taking care of your child until they're 18 years old. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to keep them in your house. Sometimes with some of that, I mean, there's a difference between normal teenage rebellious behavior and them exerting their independence and signs that something else might be going on there. So I think determining what else that might be, I mean, usually teenagers just want to be listened to. And if something else is going on, you know, it's up to them to be able to get them some help. So a lot of times that looks like, you know, maybe getting into counseling or, you know, sometimes there's a lot of mental health issues that kind of begin blossoming during adolescence and being evaluated for some of those. Or if maybe their teen is involved in drugs or something. I mean, these are the times to be able to get them help and get them some counseling or treatment or whatever it might be.
All right. So it really is about setting clear expectations and getting the kids involved with some kind of professional who's not necessarily the parent. Mm-hmm. I tell parents all the time, I get to have conversations with your kids that you only wish you could have, like, because I'm not their parent. Mm-hmm. And I know my kids are going to rebel against me and they're not going to be interested in hearing what I have to say. So the answer to my question is no. you can't you just tell your kid, get out. And then I hear kids say to me, well, my, you know, dad said, if you don't like it, get out. And then they leave and they say, he threw me out. And I mean, technically, I guess that's true. But I always say to the kid, come on. Like, really? That's not what your dad meant. He meant he wants to be able to parent you. So that's part of the problem. Okay. So the legalities of drawing the line. If your child refuses to do what you want them to do and they say, I'm leaving, and then they run away, what is the parent's obligation at that point?
Well, I definitely recommend, you know, if this is the first time they'd ever done something like this and you know that they're at their friend's house, you know, calling the parents and creating that connection. I mean, it'd be a good idea to know who your kid's hanging out with anyway. So probably, you know, having a idea of those parents and where they live and where they, so, you know, checking out their usual haunts and seeing if they might be hanging out over there. But, you know, I recommend calling the police, like call them in as a runaway.
Call them in as a runaway. So this is a great conversation, another one that I have all the time. And it is frustrating because as all of us appreciate the police department and what they do as far as like protecting our safety and running over to, you know, Sally Mae Smith's house with her 15-year-old boy who's being a pain is not really what we need our police department to be doing, I don't think, unfortunately. But that is the answer. Call the police if your kid runs.
And it's also not always a situation, you know, where the kid's like, I hate you guys, you took my Xbox, I'm out of here, I'm gonna go live at my friend's house forever, and then the cops have to drag over there and go talk to this kid. A lot of times that young person might be going somewhere that really isn't safe, and the behavior might be stemming from what's going on in that house. So there's a number of police that bring youth in, and these youth were in unsafe situations. And those unsafe situations might have been they were trying to sleep in a car, they were trespassing in an abandoned building, they were with people that were much older than them, there were drugs or alcohol involved. So having that police intervention is sometimes necessary.
I wanted to ask one question about that. If you, I mean, as a parent, I would think, I always tell parents the first thing you do is you reach out to the other parents. You find out where your kid is. You call around, like you said, his old haunts, and then reach out to that other parent. I have a lot of parents. So this question, I guess, is for the other side. What do you do if your son or daughter brings home, you know, Susie and says, hey, her dad's, you know, beat her up or, you know, or is mean to her and she needs to stay here for a few days? I have a lot of parents that with good intentions will let these kids stay without calling the other parents.
You know, I think that's pretty, you really ought to be letting that other parent know whether or not their kid's okay, unless you're so concerned that it's a safety issue, that you need to take another step. And that other step might be calling law enforcement or calling Child Protective Services and letting them know that there's abuse going on in that household and reporting it yourself. And you don't have to be a mandatory reporter to do that. Anyone can do that for a child. If you're really concerned that kid is, you know, if they're telling you that they're getting hit at home, you know, that line needs to be pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, my standard response is, wow, that's really bad. We got to call somebody. Like, we need to call the authorities and let OCS know that you're getting hurt at home. And that will either, a kid will either say, well, it's not really that bad, and I just kind of mad because they took my Xbox, or something else will come of it, and in that case we should be calling the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If your kid leaves the house and the police are called and they get them and they bring them home. I mean, all these scenarios play out every week in my office. Like, they bring them home, the kid walks in and walks back out. I mean, then is it another police call? And at what point do the police, what point would the police bring them to Covenant House instead of going back home?
I think that depends on the desire of the parents. Usually when the police are bringing a quote unquote runaway to our shelter, it's because the parents are refusing to let them stay in the home. So they may have called them in as a runaway, but they don't want them there anyhow. And that's usually when the police are dropping them off with us.
So that's one of those scenarios where the mom or dad or both says, get out. And then the kid runs and they call him as a runaway. And the kid says, well, they threw me out, so I'm not a runaway.
Or they actually threw them out and they don't want them there at all, which happens.
That would generate an OCS referral.
Yes.
All right. So as parents, it is a responsibility to provide what? Shelter. What are the things as parents that we're required to provide?
So to provide for their basic needs, medical care, education, you know, these things, the things that parents are responsible for. Love.
That's what I was thinking. Love.
Love and nurturing. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of really quality, high quality parents that love their kids that are dealing with some really, really challenging behaviors. And this isn't about blaming parents for their kids' problems, but there is a reality that a lot of adolescent homelessness is linked to substance abuse and neglect and those sorts of things. So it is an issue, but we got to be careful not to blame the parents for all this stuff. I want folks to remember that. All right, I got another email here. It says, regarding homeless kids, what can the general public do to help and or to support Covenant House?
Well, I think, I mean, to help and support Covenant House specifically, I mean, there's ways to donate, ways to volunteer time. There's ways to, I mean, you can bring in your gently used clothing and that sort of stuff. And yeah, we have
coats,
hats, gloves, all that sort of stuff. And then, yeah, you can volunteer your time. I mean, you can come and be a volunteer in the drop-in center. You can be a volunteer on the outreach team. You can come in and play games with kids and work out with kids or just be a positive presence in our space. There's an array of ways that people can get involved with Covenant House specifically. I think another thing is to be informed. You know, like I talked about outreach, everybody in our city that knows about Covenant House and what we do is a potential referral for somebody. Because it seems like everybody knows somebody at some point who might need our services or through their network of people that they can be that referral source for and can help make the phone call or help bring that youth down here or call us and say, you know, this person is out there and we can help find them. I think those are things. I think also, I mean, just from not just Covenant House standpoint, but supporting youth in our city. I think if we all spent some time investing in our youth, whether that's being, you know, Boys and Girls Club or just in our local, you know, churches or, you know, just the places that people interface with teenagers,
coaches, mentoring,
all that sort of stuff. Because youth end up with us, like Heidi said earlier, because they don't have a support system, or they lost their support system, you know, by their choice or other choices that were made.
Right.
And so the broader network of people that youth have in their life, the less chance they're going to hit the street. And so I think just as you know, around the state and around the country, if we on the whole step forward and just find, you don't have to work with at-risk teenagers to help keep kids off the street, just kids in general.
That goes back to what Kelly said about love and nurturing and having a village to raise a child. Speaking of villages, I do want to go to a phone call. We have Brenda on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering what's the ratio between city kids and village kids that go through the program. And I'll hang up and listen on the radio. Thank you very much. Happy holidays. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Brenda. Maybe you have a job in radio because that was my next question. So, yeah, that's a great question. What is the difference between the village kids? Is there a ratio? Do you guys keep track of that data?
So we don't have specific village kids to city kids. What we do have is at just not that long ago, we had about 40% of our youth who were coming from the valley, and so not from Anchorage. But we also have in that same number, or near 40% of the youth that we serve are Alaska Native youth. And so not all those youth are from villages.
Right.
But those, I think those numbers speak to or might give light into that. We do definitely, I mean, youth coming in from the village whether that's for AFN or, you know, just to see family or you know, to get supplies or whatever, those youth are pretty easy to identify on the street. You know, they're coming, especially if they haven't been in Anchorage before and they're excited. And and so those youth, I think, have a tendency to be more vulnerable to some of the bad things that are happening on the street, just because they got their, you know, they're bright eyed and bushy tailed, and folks know that they're potentially easier to take advantage of, the folks that are out there that are trying to exploit people. But I think we definitely see kids from all over the state. You know, we've got kids from off the plane, you know, from different communities in the city or in the state, and we send kids home, you know, to different parts of the state too. You know, if they came to Anchorage and whatever their experience was didn't work out, and they just, it was the best thing for them to go back to their village. We've been able to help fly kids back out of the city. Also
that were kind of stranded.
Yeah.
I did read in my research, which a lot of it's available online. I'm pretty sure this was in there, was that a lot of kids are coming from the villages to live with relatives, and things, situations aren't working out, and then they don't have the money to get back home. And then before they know it, they're at your place. And that there's a disproportionately high number of kids from the villages that are in and up, accessing your services. Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. And I think it's important, probably. That's good information and good data, like, where are these kids coming from, and why are they just stuck in Anchorage? So you guys can help with transportation back.
Yeah, depending on the situation. Depending on the situation, we have, you know, if we've had some of the more specific ones were situations where we had youth who were being trafficked, or we had youth who were being exploited in you know, really overt ways, and so it was for their safety to get them out of the city. But we have, you know, not just to the village. I mean, we're, like Heidi said earlier too, we got kids coming from all over the country and other places, and we've flown kids back to Kansas or Oregon or, you know, it really is about availability of funds and kind of how desperate the situation is, I think, on how much we're able to, you know, help people get back to where they might be coming from.
All right, so here's like a frontline intervention question. What should Joe Public, in quotes obviously, do if they're walking down a local trail and run across a young adult who's homeless or otherwise in trouble? Like, what does the average person do?
I mean, you could talk to them and find out what's going on. But if you're not prepared to do that or don't want to do that, you can just give us a call. Our 272-1255 number, crisis line, is 24 hours a day. And if you call them and or call us there, we'll go check it out. I mean, that's part of what we do on outreach. We go, like I said, we go all over the city. We go into the camps. We go into, if you see somebody, let us know, and we'll go scope it out.
You mentioned the little blue cards.
We have little blue house cards that have, it has Covenant House information, but it also has other service providers and a number of emergency numbers, both local and national, so that kids can just call. And or it has our information on it too, like our address and that sort of stuff. Social media is a big way that we interface with kids too. And so that kid, even though they don't have a place to stay, they probably have a Facebook page, and so do we. And so that's a way that they interface with us too. So you might hand them that card, and they might check us out on Facebook, and then we might be able to go pick them up that way.
Do you have a lot of like homeless kids with iPhones, and they access it through your day?
They access
program.
You can go to the library. I mean, you can go to the Apple Store in Fifth Avenue Mall. And I mean, if you scroll through the Outreach, Covenant House Outreach Facebook page, you'll see a lot of people with their background is the Mac Store, because they can get online there. You know, the selfie at the Mac Store is the
classic.
The classic picture, yeah.
And they know a lot of other people with phones and have access. I mean, they're pretty well wired.
Yeah.
All right. So what is, like, I guess, an appropriate use of Covenant House services, or what wouldn't be inappropriate? Maybe that's a better term. I mean, it sounds like if you don't have anywhere to sleep and you're worried about your safety and you're vulnerable, you should access Covenant House. But what is not an appropriate use of your services? What kind of stuff would you get and be like,
Well, I've had just horror stories of parents wanting to drop their teens off because they were going on vacation and they didn't want to put up with them. So that would not be an appropriate use of our services. You know, we're not a babysitting service. We're here for our homeless kids.
Then you're not an angry parent, like, I need the weekend off, I can't deal with my kid.
Right. We're not a respite service either.
Okay. Although there, you do work in conjunction with some of the foster homes to, or the foster. How do you work with the foster folks in Anchorage?
So we do offer what's called a 3-day cooling off period, and that is granted when a youth, and whether or not they're in a foster home situation or they're with their own legal guardians, whoever they might be, and which there's conflict going on in the home, and we might offer a 3-day cooling off period, and that's granted on a case-by-case basis to get some space, get some perspective, and then maybe we can help with providing some interventions in that home so that the youth can return back there successfully.
All right. One thing I want to get back to, and I want to remind parents of, that this is important when we think about the kids who are out on the streets and the parents not calling them in as a runaway. It's my understanding, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but that parents are liable for what their children are doing if they do not report them as being out of supervision or out of the parenting, out of their control or whatever you want to call it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, to my understanding, that's correct.
All right, so parents need to call in if they don't know where their kids are, report them as runaway, and then if their parents kids show back up, call the authorities and say, we've got it sorted out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Heidi, I'd want to put you on the spot. I did not know that you had been a homeless teen, and you can, like, just stop me if you don't want me to ask these questions, but it's a really interesting and unique perspective. Like, what was the thing that, like, helped you the most, or what's the thing you remember most about, like, these services that was beneficial or important, I guess?
Well, I think two things stuck out in my mind. Walking around the streets all night, there's a knife in my pocket, every alley, every dark spot, I'm running past because I don't want to get grabbed. And one of the things that somebody did had nothing to do with Covenant House or social workers or any services. It was a guy working on a lighting pole, and he was working on it, and he came down and said something like, hey kid, you want something to eat? And he took me to McDonald's on Arctic and Benson and fed me and just talked to me. And I felt like I wasn't invisible when so many other people had been walking past me, had seen me out all night. You know, I was like 14-year-old girl wearing a jean jacket.
Wow.
And I had a number of people who I was invisible to. So this man, he made me feel like I was a person. And that was the first thing. So one of the questions that was asked was, what does the average Joe do for those homeless kids? And Josh had put, you know, talk to them, ask them how they are. That I would say that was something that has always stuck with me. I think the second thing is when I stayed at Covenant House, the first time I stayed at Covenant House, I had only done an overnight because I didn't know what was going to happen. And I didn't want them, you know, turning in my family and me having to go to foster care or anything like that. So I took off the next day. But I knew that they knew I wasn't telling the truth about what was going on in my life, and they still let me stay there because they could tell that I needed help. And I think that relationship meant everything to me. And then the next couple of times I stayed there, I came back for that reason.
All right. So it was really, it sounds about like what Josh was mentioning is about, and what Kelly said about love and seeing people and acknowledging a person for being a person and saying, hey, do you need help?
Mm-hmm.
That was, and then just accepting.
Yes.
And seeing you. That's really cool. I'd like another hour to talk to you, like, at some point, because that sounds like a good show. All right. So I guess the last thing you guys want to, like, leave people with, if there's something that you want to kind of have listeners take with them from this first program, what would that be? I guess we could start with whoever is prepared. Or Josh.
Well, I think, and this isn't just specific to youth homelessness, but this is our city, this is our state, and we get to decide by the choices that we make, what it looks like. And we have all of these really bad things that happen here, statistically. You know, we have all this bad stuff. But we, every person has an opportunity to step up and look at those bad things and figure out how to be a part of the solution. And so that's youth homelessness, that's suicide, that's addiction, all that sort of stuff. We got a lot of hard stuff. But I believe that we can make change. And it starts with us making decisions to do that. So I would encourage people to look around, see what's wrong, and be a part of the solution.
All right. That's good. Kelly?
It's already been mentioned, but I would say relationship is so important and mentorship. And I've had several friends ask me, what can I do? I always say, go mentor. Just be friends with the young person. And you said you have conversations every week that parents wish they could have because you're not their parents. So it's so important we have those chances to be that for someone else. And I've had my people who've mentored me, and it's meant the world. So I think mentorship is a huge aspect.
All right. Heidi?
Our youth are so incredible. I mean, I just can't say enough how talented and funny and resilient they are. And, you know, I sit in my office and I look out in our lounge and they're coloring and they're playing guitar and they're having laughs and they're helping decorate the Christmas tree. And there's a house full of them. And that's just so inappropriate to have 60 homeless kids that are in the house. And, you know, I mean, they're great kids, but they don't deserve to be homeless. So I think the more programs that we can have for appropriate foster homes and group homes, you know, all of these things are really needed.
Yeah, I always say to parents, like, part of my job as a therapist for adolescents is getting them to come back the second and third time. And that sounds like a lot of what you're doing is getting kids to recognize that they have people who care about them. All right. My thanks to today's guests, Josh Lowers, Heidi Carson, and Kelly Jo Pruitt from Covenant House, Alaska. If you'd like to continue today's conversation, you can join KSK on Facebook, and you can find the link on our website. That's alaskapublic.org. In 1610, Shakespeare wrote, "We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep." On the next Line One, Dr. Woodard explores our current knowledge of sleep and sleep disorders with Dr. Ross Dodge. So why not tune into Your Health and learn more Monday, January 5th at 2 p.m., repeating the same evening at 9 p.m. on FM 91.1 KSKA Anchorage. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Please remember that you can podcast today's show along with all of KSK's other great programs by going to alaskapublic.org. My next show comes on Monday, January 26th, when I expect to have conflict expert Bill Eddy join me for a conversation about dealing with high conflict people. You can go to his website, highconflictinstitute.com, to learn more about what he does. For regular listeners of Line One, thanks again for your support. If this is your first time joining us, I hope you enjoyed the show. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.